All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Canucks fans. Welcome back to another episode of Canucks Conversation, brought to you, as always, by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. The BZ4X will get you through it. All David Quadrelli alongside Harmon Dial. It is Canucks Conversation, and it's a bit of a busier episode of Canucks Conversation. The Vancouver Canucks practiced today out at UBC. Not sure exactly what was said just yet, but we did see some new line rushes courtesy of our friend Batch Hockey, who tweeted it out. He tweeted out that Dakota Joshua is skating with JT Miller and Brock Besser. So Harmon, this million-dollar question that we've had recently of what's going to happen when Dakota Joshua gets healthy? Are we going to see the third line with Connor Garland, Teddy Bluger, and Dakota Joshua reunited? It seems like Connor Garland's going to stay right there on Elias Pettersson's line while Dakota Joshua moves up to the top six with JT Miller and Brock Besser. I love that line as a stylistic fit.
I fully agree, especially you want to maintain that connection between Pettersson and Garland, give them some more opportunity to build some chemistry, and then beyond that as well. We saw in the last game PDG on that Miller line, and it just didn't work. It feels like they could really benefit from a guy that can forecheck, win some battles, get to the net, especially because JT and Brock, they thrive off the cycle. That's where they do their damage offensively. They're not a line that creates a ton off the rush. And Joshua's offensive style with how he crashes the net, his underrated hands in and around the net, his offensive instincts in and around the net. I think that'll likely mesh well with Miller and Besser. It's worth a shot at the very least, especially because the Bluger, Mikheyev, Lafferty line, even though it wasn't really sexy on paper, they performed well, I thought, in spurts. And I'm I don't think you need to rejig the Bluger line, for instance.
Pia Suter goes down to the fourth line to center the line. And again, we had this conversation recently, Harm. There's no real fourth line. It's two bottom six lines that you're going to play pretty interchangeably there. Suter skates with Podkolzin and Amon. And Teddy Bluger, like you said, centers that line with Ilya Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty. That obviously means that Elias Lindholm was not at practice. We're waiting for an update on Elias Lindholm. We'll see what ends up happening here. But the other big news of the day was the Canucks retroactively placed Thatcher Demko on LTIR. And we have someone asking questions about it in the chat, so I will quickly explain it. Demko went down on March 9th in that 5-0 victory the Canucks had over the Winnipeg Jets. He left in the second period of that game. Basically, what happened was when that injury occurred, we heard the original reporting of 2 to 4 weeks that Demko would be out. That makes me think the Canucks thought maybe there was a chance he could return sooner than that. Obviously, like the sooner than the 4 weeks, that is. You need to miss 10 games or 24 days, or excuse me, 10 games and 24 days in order to be placed on LTIR, but you can be placed on LTIR retroactively, which is what the Canucks have done now with Thatcher Demko. He's eligible to return on April 6th. Doesn't mean he's going to return on April 6th, but it does give us a pretty good indication that the Canucks don't think they're getting Thatcher, or they know they're not getting Thatcher Demko back before April 6th. He's not going to be ready to go by then. So now they have some extra cap space. They call up Arshdeep Bains, which kind of allows them to carry him on the roster. He skated as an extra at practice day, but quickly wanted to kind of explain that. It doesn't seem like that's going to mean anything for Demko's playoff availability. I still think the Canucks want to get him into at least 3 starts, and I think they'll be able to do it again. We haven't heard of any setbacks. We haven't heard anything other than Rick Tocchet say when the injury first happened that he has zero concern about Demko being ready for the playoffs. Anything on that, Harm?
Yeah, just to reiterate what you were basically saying, I don't think it really means anything from Demko's perspective. Like, I saw some people worrying about, could this be a potential setback? It lines up the April 6th potential eligibility for his return with the timeline that we've been expecting, especially because it's not like he's been taking the ice and skating or practicing with the team. So we weren't expecting a return soon anyway. And this is really, if anything, it would hint to you about Lindholm potentially not being available, which of course he didn't practice, so that kind of confirmed it. This is more about just opening up the roster spot in the cap space to add some extra forward insurance from Abbotsford.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was out at Abbotsford yesterday. If you haven't listened to yesterday's show, folks, go listen to it. But let's not make him wait any longer. Let's get to it. Frank Cervalli is our guest today, and he's brought to you, fittingly, by the Wendy's Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool game. The only thing sweeter than the taste of victory is starting your day with the new Cinnabon Pull Apart from Wendy's. But there's no reason you can't have both, because Wendy's and Daily Faceoff Survivor are giving you a chance to win weekly prizes all season long. And hey, even if you make a few wrong picks like I have, at least you know heading to Wendy's right now for a $5 Cinnabon Pull Apart and small coffee is a great choice. Sign up for Daily Faceoff's Fantasy Pool Survivor today, sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. Harmon, I was getting criticized for reading the ads too fast, so I really slowed that one down, put a lot of emphasis, because we love all our sponsors here on Canucks Convo, and we especially love Wendy's because they sponsor the Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool game. So as I said, fittingly, I'm not going to call you the nickname. You don't like that nickname, Frank. I won't do it.
Is fittingly, like, are you saying I look like I'm someone that eats at Wendy's often?
Maybe no, not I'm not trying to say that. I'm trying to say that you're going to make me say it. You're the daddy at Daily Faceoff, right? Daddy Faceoff. That's what we called you. You didn't like it, but you asked me to explain it, so I had to. You run Daily Faceoff. You're the head honcho there. So of course you're here.
Quads. When are we going to teach you to use your words more carefully?
Yeah, one day. Frank, Thatcher Demko on LTIR, I think you heard my explanation of it. Nothing there to read into. Like, I know some Canucks fans are worried about him missing the playoffs, anything like that. Like, do you know any indication if there's been a setback, anything like that?
No. This is purely a cap machination. They were looking for a little bit of extra flexibility. They get that now, and they have a pretty good sense of the timeline of when Demko is going to be back. They obviously want to get him a couple regular season games before heading into the playoffs. April 6th or beyond will allow for that. And right from the very initial instance, there was never really any concern of, you know, this is a significant injury, it's going to cost him momentous times of the season, nothing like that. So I think the Canucks are pretty confident. And look, you never know how these things go, in the sense that timing, rhythm, all that. will it be helpful, hurtful? There's probably cases to make for both. Me personally, given the lifting that Demko has done this season, I would look at it, if he is truly healthy, in a real positive way, that your goalie is going to be one of the most fresh heading into the postseason.
Do you have any indication of what's going on with Lindholm? Is there any concern about his potential playoff availability?
I have less insight on Lindholm. Don't really know what exactly the issue is. Have some ideas, wouldn't want to speculate. And I think there's more of an unknown. I think it's obviously something that he can try and, you know, power through and play through. The other part of that is it feels like he's less than optimal and not at his best. So that part is tough. And I saw some Canucks fans on social media saying, you know, hey, you got to go back to Calgary and review the medical records when this trade was made. I don't think that has anything to do with it. Medical records are shared typically before a deal is made and questions are asked. So don't think there's anything to that front. But what it may do is at least offer some explanation into the game that we've seen from Lindholm to this point.
Frank, what can you tell us about this story you wrote yesterday about the salary cap? It could have been higher this season, has to do with escrow and stuff. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so without having everyone's eyes glaze over on a complicated issue, basically the long and short of it is this year, as part of the MOU, players had 6% of their paychecks withheld. And given that league revenue is on track for $6.2 billion this year, the players are on track, if that number is accurate, to get upwards of half of that back. So potentially 3% of their income back to them at well after the season's over and the final accounting is done. And the reason why the cap could have been higher is, as also part of this deal, the players had to pay back $50 to $75 million to finish off the debt that they owed owners from the pandemic losses. And the thought process is the PA went to the league and said, hey, we'd like to try and increase the cap this season, you know, beyond $83.5 million. What can we do? And the league said, well, we could do that. We're happy to do it, but we would need you to withhold more pay in escrow to ensure a 50-50 split. And the players had presented some math saying, look, like, this cap is artificially low relative to revenue based on the way the system is set up. Can we find a way to increase this cap even just a little bit more? And the league had said, yeah, but you got to give us something in return. And the player said, no, this 6% is what we negotiated. This was the win for us in this CBA. This was how a lot of players structured and negotiated their deals. To take the most amount of money these years of the CBA, because they knew that escrow was locked in at six and they didn't want to move off of that, which is why the cap ended up being $83.5 million. And unfortunately, because so many teams were tight to the cap, that actually resulted in the loss of about 25 full-time NHL jobs this year, because instead of 23-man rosters, which is the max, a lot of teams were forced to carry 21 and or 22 and shuffle players back and forth, that it ended up resulting in less money in the system, less money for teams to spend, less jobs.
Frank, it looks like the Canucks are going to get Dakota Joshua back in the lineup soon. He's one of several UFAs that they have. When you think of Joshua, Bluger, even on the back end, Zadorov, Ian Cole, Casey DeSmith, on and on. I know it's super early, but do you have any early indication on which of these pending UFAs the Canucks are particularly high on in terms of the value that they bring to the team?
I think the first thing that they'd like to get done, which seems less and less likely to get finished off before this regular season concludes, is the Filip Ronek contract. We already did that last week. Don't worry, we're not going down that path again. You can just rewind to last week's episode if you want to hear my insight and info. But I do think that of that entire group that you listed, I think they really like what they've seen from Casey to Smith, just in terms of having some stability at that position. Can you find someone maybe a little cheaper? Potentially. But it seems like him and Demko have gotten along pretty well too, which has been important. I think they value the intelligence of Teddy Bluger. And I obviously there's a connection between, or certainly one has grown between Rick Tocchet and Dakota Joshua. He's had a really solid season that he took a big step forward this year, in terms of impact and consistency. So, you know, I'd say those are the three guys that kind of stand out. Cole has been good. Cole has been kind of exactly what, you'd want him to be. I think it's all going to come down to how they want to shuffle these dollars around.
I always wonder about this because we have these conversations and, like, look, Frank, we've said it a few times. We think Filippone is probably going to get paid a little bit too much money, but like a guy like Dakota Joshua, what does he get on the open market after the season he's having?
Probably cool, like 275 ish, 2.5.
I think the Canucks pay for that. Like my opinion, like I think they should sign that.
It's hard for me to answer that in a vacuum because you have to shuffle a lot of pieces around in order to be able to, you know, go from 800,000 to 275, for instance. And I mean, me personally, I like Dakota Joshua and I like the fit that he's been, but my thought process on bottom six forwards is, by nature, you should be able to coach and develop guys into those roles. And I always look at the Boston Bruins. I don't know why this is, but I think no team in the league does as good a job as finding fourth line players. Mm-hmm. And they basically come in, they mold them into a role. This is, seems to be an organizational philosophy. And then once it's time for a significant raise, they cut them loose. And I just like, I think when you look at some other players that have been through the Canucks of late, and even just saying this name is going to bother people, but you get locked into Tanner Pearson type contracts for guys that end up in your bottom six, and you really start to hate your cap structure. You start to, you know, you're looking at it and you say, can we get the same production or close to it for closer to league minimum? That instead of just falling in love with guys, we should have just made the decision to say, what you did here was awesome. We loved every second of it. We'd love to keep you, but we can't afford you. And I wonder if that's the type of decisions that Vancouver is ultimately going to have to make. How can we go out and find the next one of these with our scouting eye that isn't going to cost us as much, where we can then take that money and slide it to the core players that we really need to pay that are the engines that drive our team?
I absolutely agree. And I mean, you look at what Dakota Joshua was last year and even at the start of this year and how far he's come under Rick Tocchet. You have to hope that with your pro scouting and with your coaching staff that you're able to kind of go out and find the next Dakota Joshua. Okay, Frank, I wanted to ask you about this in Philly. John Tortorella, Sean Couturier, what's going on there? And then I saw Tortorella was apologizing for not answering a question about a goalie or something. What's going on in Philly?
Yeah, we're not going to relitigate the John Tortorella, Sean Couturier thing. He's back in the lineup. It seems like some fences have been mended. The reason why I had pointed out the Tortorella apology was that, look, if you're going to hammer this guy for the mistakes that he makes, you also need to give him some credit for stepping up and apologizing publicly on the way he basically portrayed his goalie's game after a totally innocuous question. And there's always emotion, there's frustration, competitive juices flowing. I think maybe John Tortorella more so than some other coaches, especially when you get them right after the game. And I would say that, look, It's funny. I have some, you know, sort of criticism from a media perspective. Like if you took a step back and didn't go into the post-game press conference sort of with such apparent disdain for the media and the questions that you're going to get, maybe you wouldn't always respond so flippantly. And it was also kind of like tongue in cheek where you apologized and said that it was a legitimate question in which you gave a flippant answer. Does that mean the rest of the ones are all stupid? I don't know. I mean, we could kind of, we could have a field day and unpack it, probably unfair. But I just wanted to, you know, at least with my tweet to just say, hey, like it says a lot that you're going to apologize. And, I think a lot of this last 10 days for John Tortorella, unfortunately, has undone what has been a tremendous coaching job this season. Some would argue maybe the most difficult of his career, rebuilding team that he's squeezed every last drop out of that is in a solid track, 70% shot to make the playoffs.
Speaking of the Eastern Conference playoff race, how is Washington in a playoff spot? Because they've got a minus 26 goal differential, one of the worst teams in the NHL at controlling 5-on-5 play, don't even have a point per game producer. How are they in a playoff spot? How do they keep winning?
Harm, the answer to your question, and I hear this goal differential thing a lot, is that they are selective in how they lose, if this makes any sense. So I'll throw this stat at you. 26 Caps regulation losses this year. 21 of them have been by three or more goals.
Wow. I mean,
that's your answer right there. Why is our goal differential so bad? It's because when you lose, you really freaking lose. But the rest of the time, it seems like, I mean, that's a huge chunk of the season, almost half of it. The rest of the time, they're actually somewhat decent.
I'm looking at the Eastern Conference playoff picture. It's looking like a sleepwalk to the finish line. Who gets the playoff spots? Who gets the playoff spots in the East, Frank?
So I think it's going to be the Caps. But here's my hot take, is that the Caps catch the Flyers and the Flyers end up in the second wild card spot.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, it's not really that hot of a take. They're only 1 point back.
But yeah.
The Flyers have beaten some pretty good teams the last 10 days. The Bruins, they went to OT with the Canes. They beat the Leafs in regulation. Like, they've actually had a decent stretch of hockey where, you know, I just, they're, it's not like they're collapsing by any stretch. And the crazy part is, when you do the math, I think both teams are kind of on pace for like 91 or 92 points ish. Neither one of those teams needs to light the world on fire in order to do that and get in. You're talking like barely 500 hockey, 510 hockey down the stretch, 10 points out of their last 20-ish should get them in.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Sound logic. Sound logic. I like it, Frank. Thanks so much for doing this, and we will chat with you next week, and we'll be sure to ask you about Filip Peronik next week.
Too soon. See you guys.
Thank you, sir. Thanks. All right. There he is, Frank Saravalli. You can see him all over the place at dailyfaceoff.com. Got a few shows that you can go check out as well. Yeah, good stuff over at Daily Faceoff with our pal, Frank Saravalli. Okay. One interesting thing that I really want to touch on, Harm, there was Casey DeSmith. The idea that the Canucks could be interested in re-signing Casey DeSmith. Frank talked about how Demko and DeSmith have a good relationship, which is absolutely true. But I think even the more important one is DeSmith and Ian Clark. Like, those two have meshed well this season. Earlier in the season, there were some questions about what that relationship would look like. We know Clark demands a lot of his goaltenders, and it's been a really good fit from all indications. I think Ian Clark has found a really good way of working on DeSmith in a different way than maybe he'd work on a 21-year-old goalie, obviously, right? I think he's done a really good job of that, and I think DeSmith has kind of enjoyed the working relationship with Ian Clark. And I just think that matters a lot. Again, like I said, I think earlier in the year, there were some questions of how that would go. And by all indications, it's worked out really well. So that might be another reason that the Canucks would want to re-sign Casey DeSmith.
Yeah, and at the right price, an extension definitely makes sense. I mean, if the Canucks were in a different phase of their team building, where maybe they weren't as competitive or they were retooling or something, you may have instead looked at that and gone, well, we want to see what we have in Artur Silovs next year, maybe give him an opportunity. But as a contending team, that is not only going to be trying to make the playoffs, but contend for a Stanley Cup again, you need a veteran backup. And what DeSmith has done, I mean, look at how well he's held the fort. And I know the Canucks have defended well in front of him, but he's held the fort down pretty impressively since Demko has gone down with injury. So yeah, at the right price, it makes a lot of sense, especially because Rick Tocchet has constantly gone out of his way to praise how much the teammates like DeSmith's presence in the locker room as well, just his personality as well. Those things matter, especially when it comes to backup goalies and sort of like your 7th, 8th defenseman or your 13th forward. You want those players to not just be useful when they're called upon, but also be personalities that the rest of your locker room really gravitates towards and respects and enjoys.
And DeSmith is that. They block shots for him. They block shots for him, which means they like him.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, let's get to our next segment here. This is a really interesting one, Harmon. You were the one that actually came up with it, and I thought it was super fitting because yesterday I had a fantasy baseball draft, and it took 4 hours. It's my big league that I'm always talking about, 20-team league. I got a really good team. But anyways, so it was auction draft, right? And you get an auction budget. For those that don't know, it doesn't matter that it's baseball, whatever sport, right? You get X amount of dollars, and you have to draft the best team possible with those dollars. So me personally, I'm looking for the best value adds. I'm looking for guys that maybe are going to go for less money, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to get a lot of value out of what they're doing on the field, right? So it was interesting you brought it up because I've had value like this on my mind for a while now because I was preparing for this draft. And the idea you came up with was for us to figure out who's had the most surplus value for the Vancouver Canucks. Cap Friendly has this cost per point chart, which is helpful, provides some context, and shows us that in terms of how much the Canucks are paying for each point that the player is scoring, that Dakota Joshua, Nils Höglander are the most valuable, and then Sam Lafferty, Pia Suter, Teddy Bluger, Phil DiGiuseppe. You're going to see a lot of bottom six players on that list, but that doesn't necessarily mean they are the most valuable. So you and I have thought about, okay, how could we move this in the direction of figuring out with all the context that we have, not just their goal scoring and their point production, who has been the most valuable Canuck in terms of what they're paying and what they're getting from the player. And I love that you came up with this idea because I've got a list now. Are we doing five? Top five, Harm?
Sure. I've got 10. I've ranked my top 10, actually.
Top 10. Okay. Well, I'll give you my five, and you know, then you just go 6 to 10.
Sure, but you know what's crazy is in years past, it would have been the opposite. What are the worst surplus value contracts? Like, if we did this exercise last year, we would have had, what, like, three contracts? We would have had maybe four, actually. We would have had Hughes, Pettersson, Demko, and Kuzmenko.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kuzmenko would have been leading the pack by, like, a pretty significant margin. Pretty significant margin at that. But this year, I don't have one of those big stars at the top. I have Dakota Joshua at number one.
Interesting. I had Höglander, just because if you exclude ELC players, he has the second best goal scoring rate relative to cap hit in the NHL. And I think you could make a case that based off Höglander's top six impact lately, that he's played closer to a $4.5 million rate. But Joshua's not bad either. I actually had him quite a ways. This is the difficult part of actually doing this exercise. I think everyone's so packed in that Joshua was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He was seventh on my list.
Wow, seventh. I didn't even go to seven. I only have five. Okay, so I'm going to tell you why I have Joshua number one, and I do have Nils Höglander number two, but I'll explain why I have Joshua number one here. And it really comes down to what the Canucks haven't been able to do since he's been out of the lineup and what he was doing for the Canucks when he was in the lineup. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Nils Höglander. There's a reason I have him at number two. Like, he's been great. I think it's really a flip-flop, but I'm surprised you have Joshua at seventh, because not only does he lead them in points per dollar, like, he's produced the most for what he's paid, but this is a guy that kills penalties. This is a guy that's all over the lineup, right? Like, he's playing everywhere you need him to. He's playing in multiple situations. And I think just the hit that the team's taken since he's gone down with this hand injury at the start of February, I think that shows that if we were just doing a straight MVP rankings, Harm, like, I think Joshua comes up higher than Höglander on the MVP rankings. And then I also think, okay, well, Joshua makes less money than Höglander as well. So that's why I have Joshua at number one.
See, I think that's where we disagree. I think Höglander has been more valuable. Especially because of what he's done in the top six lately. Like, imagine what Vancouver's top six looks like going into the playoffs if Höglander is a decent fourth liner, but that's it, right? Sure. Like, he's somebody that can score on the fourth line. And it's not just that he's producing, it's now the underlying numbers are, especially since the All-Star break, are really sparkling for him. And, like, the math for me with Joshua was, I sort of looked at, I'm rating him this season as, like, a high-end third liner. That's the level that he's played at. And if you go through, like, 32 teams times six forwards, it's 192 forwards. So you would peg him somewhere around the 200th, most valuable forward in the NHL. Very rough back of the napkin math. And so if you look at the 200 ranked forward NHL forward in cap it, that's around $3.5 million, which is around $2.5 million of surplus. Whereas I think you can make a case that this year, Höglander's been worth close to what Ilya Mikheyev should have been, like around $4.5 million. But again, I think that's just the discrepancy there. And I get where you're coming from with Joshua. And again, that's why this exercise is fun, is because there's such a thin margin separating all these guys.
Who do you have at number two? That's what I'm really curious about. Because at number three, I'll just say, at number three, I have Quinn Hughes. And not to jump the gun too much, but I think, look, we know what he's getting paid. We know he's underpaid because they signed him long-term when he was younger. I have Quinn Hughes at number three. But who do you have at two? And then tell us who you have at three as well.
I have Hughes at number two. If you just look at Erik Karlsson's highest-paid defenseman at 11.5, you subtract that from Hughes at, what, 7.85, and that's more than $3.5 million in surplus value. So I've got Hughes two, and then I've got Demko three.
Demko three. I like that. So Thatcher Demko at $5 million. I actually have Demko at number five. I've got JT Miller at number four, and I know JT Miller makes $8 million, but the way he's playing this year, and even when it comes to cost per point, like, he's right up there. I mean, it goes Elias Pettersson and then JT Miller and then Quinn Hughes in terms of cost per point. But I just think everything else that JT Miller's done, like, JT Miller's been this team's matchup center this year. He's done everything for them. I've got JT Miller ahead of him at number four.
Yeah, the reason I had Demko ahead of Miller, and I don't have Miller that much lower, I think I have Miller 1, 2, 3, 4. I have him at 6 is because I looked at Connor Hellebuyck on his next extension as next season, he's going to be making $8.5 million. And that's actually a discount relative to what, for example, Andrei Vasilevskiy makes. And for most of the season, Demko has paced with Hellebuyck. So you go 8.5 minus five, that's about $3.5 million in surplus value. Whereas with Miller, he's been exceptional, but it's just that he, and I think Miller has arguably been more valuable than Demko this year if you were to just rank pure performance and value to this team. But he's got a much higher cap hit at $8 million there, and he's 10th in NHL scoring. And if you're trying to make a case that he's $3 or $3.5 million, that he's been worth $3 to $3.5 million more than his actual cap hit, then you're getting into the territory of, he's been worth $11.5 million, which, I mean, it's close, but I don't think he's quite there.
Okay, I'm trying to make up the rest of my list as well, because I also want to try to go to 10. So I'm curious who you have in the rest of your list. I have Pettersson at 5. Pettersson was my 5th, and I did end it there, but I'm trying to come up with it on the fly because I think that's going to be a lot of fun to kind of go all the way to 10.
Yeah, one sec here. Sorry, I had Miller 5th, not 6th. Okay. So just to recap, I got Höglander 1, Hughes 2, Demko 3, and then I've got Filip Hronek 4th. And the reason is he's a $4.4 million top pair right side defenseman. It's rare to find that type of player making that type of impact. And I know he gets the Quinn Hughes bump for sure. But even factoring that in, again, like a top pair right-handed defenseman for under $4.5 million, that's tough value to beat.
That's fair enough. And I do have Hronek on my list as well. And it's so funny. It's interchangeable. But I'm going to ask you about one guy. You can give me the rest of your list. I'm going to ask you about one guy. Noah Juulsen. Where do you have him? Like, I don't have him.
I don't have him in the top 10.
Yeah, it's fine. You don't have to be right all the time. Juulsen is absolutely a top 10 most valuable player for this team. And to reiterate the exercise, because I think there's some people in the YouTube live chat, and when we post this on YouTube, there's going to be some people in the comment section not understanding the exercise. We are trying to determine who is the Canucks, you know, most valuable players based on what they are being paid compared to what they're putting out. So to reiterate, we've got guys like Dakota Joshua. Nils Höglander is at the top of both of our lists with what he's done. Quinn Hughes as well. All these guys there. I think Noah Juulsen, who's making league minimum, Harmon, he's got to be on your list.
No, zero chance. Zero chance. Oh, list all 10. Because here's the thing. He's a number 6-7 defenseman, and he's been a good number 6-7 defenseman. But guess what? The whole point of league minimum salaries is because that's what you typically pay a number 6-7 defenseman.
He's been a 5-6 defenseman for this.
No,
team,
he has been.
At times this year, he has been. He's had
at
to time, be.
At times, but also, if you look at the early part of the season, you can't ignore that he had the low periods there too. Like, don't get me wrong. I like Noah Juulsen. I think it's not so much that I haven't liked what he's done relative to his contract, because it's a good contract. It's just that this team has so many other contributors higher up the lineup. Like, look at, you know, after Miller at 5, I've got Pettersson at 6, Joshua at 7. And then you get to like Pia Suter, right? For $1.6 million, he's been a Swiss Army knife all over your lineup. He can play second line, third line, wing, center. I'd argue he's provided more surplus value than Noah Juulsen. Even Brock Besser, guy scoring, he's on pace for 42 goals, making just over $6.5 million. I think he's provided more surplus value than Juulsen as well. I'd even argue Carson Soucy. Like, he's outperformed his $3.25 million cap hit.
Yeah, he has. I do have all those guys that you who. Okay, give us your top 10. I see where we're disagreeing here. Give us it in order. Okay. Your top 10.
Nils Höglander 1, Quinn Hughes number 2, Thatcher Demko 3, Filip Hronek 4, JT Miller 5, Elias Pettersson 6, Dakota Joshua 7, Pia Suter 8, Brock Besser 9, Carson Soucy 10.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I think Suter's the only guy I don't have on my list. I have Juulsen at 10. I don't have Suter on my list at all.
That's a bad take.
It's not a bad take. It's a vibes take. And sign up. We're getting a lot of feedback in the chat now. We're getting a lot of feedback in the chat now, which I really like. Someone brought up that OEL would be number one. Logan Van Dyke said in Florida, OEL's number one.
Oh, yeah.
Value, except they're not having these conversations in Florida. Karin said, Hronek at four is wild. His play in the second half has really disappointed me. And look, like, Hronek splits in the first half compared to the second half of the season are pretty undeniable. And another thing from practice day, Harm, that we didn't even bring up was that Hronik's back with Hughes. Like, Hronek is right back with Hughes. We saw him hold down a pair on his own for one game, and he's right back with Hughes. So, again, the Quinn Hughes merchant allegations, don't know if Hronek's going to be beating those anytime soon.
Yeah, okay, maybe I can see the case for bumping Hronek down a little bit. But again, how many legit top pair, especially right shot defensemen, are you going to find under $4.5 million?
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I just don't know if it's number four. Like,
sure.
I think you're omitting some decent names there. And Noel Juulsen's one of them. Noel Juulsen's one of them.
I can understand the case for maybe bumping Hronek below Miller, Pettersson, Joshua. On the fly, I'll agree with that.
Okay. Charlie Cole, it always comes back to Juulsen, Sinochik. Quads uses vibes and Harm uses logic. Karin, I would like to compare this to Quads from last year, who was ready to send Noel Juulsen to the moon. And it is absolutely true. I did flip-flop quite a bit on the Juulsen tick, but he was bad last year. He was bad.
Everyone, he was good this year. Actually, he was good last year. It was the start of this season where, I mean, we were all in agreement that Noah Juulsen should not be playing at that time. We were all ready to send him to the moon, but credit to him and the coaching staff. But he's still not. I still think it's insane. I've at least admitted that, okay, Hronek at number four was a bit too high. He should be bumped down. I was wrong about that. But you cannot have Noah Juulsen on that list at a Pia Suter.
I can, though. I can and I will, right? Like, that's 1. The thing you don't 7, know about me.
Crazy, dude.
And that's, you know, it's tough, though, because on this cap-friendly list that we were looking at earlier, Pia Suter is fourth on the Canucks in points per dollar. So, yeah, might be hard to defend that. Dollars per point, excuse me.
I mean, yeah, like 26 points in 58 games, but more than that, his two-way and defensive metrics are among some of the best among all Canuck forwards.
It's Jacoby. Quads. What round of the playoffs do the Canucks need to reach for you to get a Noah Juulsen jersey hung up in your office? We'll see. We'll see about that one day, but not today. We'll see. We'll see. We'll take it into the playoffs. I gotta see. Gotta see how it goes. Okay. We have any? Okay, so we're done this segment. You good, Harm? You get everything out? Did you have anything else?
Yeah. Well, one more thing. Just consider this, okay? The Canucks have a plus 19 goal differential with Pia Suter on the ice. Plus 19, because they barely get scored on when he's on the ice. I want to pull up Noah Juulsen just for comparison. And yeah, Pia Suter, 1.43 goals against rate at 5-on-5. Like, the Canucks are elite defensively on top of the secondary offense he's put up. And then just give me a sec here to pull up Juulsen. Juulsen, it's loading up his... I love how Natural Stat Trick just by default loads up his power play stats first. Yeah, the Canucks are plus one with Juulsen on the ice at 5-on-5, which is good. I like that in a bottom pair defenseman, but I don't think he's outperformed his contract by a wider margin than Suter.
Counterpoint, this one from Top G. Analytics are for losers.
Hate all these complex analytical models like goals for and against.
And he did clarify, he's just quoting Gretzky. Gretzky once said that. So, hey, something to think about, Harm. Something to think about. Something to think about. Okay, let's get to... Grady, you said you had an update on something with Lindholm from practice. Can you full screen this? All right. Here it is. Okay, they're saying Lindholm's injury isn't long-term. This one from Adam K over at the Hockey News. I really should know how to say his last name, but over at the Hockey News, he wrote this. Talkett answered questions surrounding Elias Lindholm and his current injury. Lindholm has missed the last few practices and did not play Monday versus Kings. Well, Talkett wouldn't go into detail. He did say, I'm not really concerned. I think it's just something a little nagging. That's okay. It's gone.
One sec.
That's getting better every day. That's the way you got to look at it. Talkett also mentioned that he doesn't believe the injury is long-term, but would not give a date for Lindholm's return to the lineup. That's all right, so some interesting stuff.
Adam Kjersten Blatt from the Hockey News.
There you go. That wasn't so hard to pronounce. I'm going to get that next time. Okay. So interesting stuff. We'll see what happens with Lindholm there. Do we know anything about how close? And folks, again, apologies because Canucks practice kind of just wrapped up here. Do we know when Joshua is getting back? Like, do we know anything about that? Oh, yeah. Here we go. Yeah, okay. Dakota Joshua, on whether he will be able to play tomorrow, this courtesy of our pal again, Brendan Batchelor. Yeah, possibly. I'm not sure yet. We'll talk about it and see how the morning goes. So regardless, he's close. Dakota Joshua is close to returning, and that is certainly a good sign for the Canucks.
Yeah, especially against a team like the Stars, to be able to inject Joshua's forechecking, his wall work, his size, some of the edge that he brings is going to be a nice boost against the Stars specifically.
All right. This was one big anyone else segment, but let's get to our actual anyone else segment presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. That's all capital letters, NATION, and the numbers 25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms do apply. With Double Dash on DoorDash, you can order from multiple restaurants or stores in the same delivery without additional delivery fees, so everyone can get what they want and need. Okay, here's one from Travis Wall, regular listener of the show. Travis Wall: will the Abbey Canucks make the AHL playoffs? I'm confused how the format works. Doesn't look great when I look at the standings. They will make it, from what I understand. They will make the playoffs, but they will make it as the last seed. The Abbotsford Canucks just aren't as good as they were last year, but last year they also had Nils Höglander. Like, they were good. And again, 23 teams make the AHL playoffs, right? So they are going to make it. They're going to make it. They'll be fine. The top seven teams in the Pacific Division make the playoffs. And right now, Abbotsford is at seventh. The Henderson Silver Knights are at 57 points, and they've played one more game than Abbotsford. Abbotsford is at 70 points through 62 games played. So they will make the playoffs. They'll be fine. But they are going to probably have to match up with the Coachella Valley Thunderbirds, Seattle Kraken farm team, of course, who are in first place in the Pacific. So they're going to make it, but they're probably going to make it as the last seed. There is a chance they catch the Calgary Wranglers or the Bakersfield Condors, or hell, maybe even the Ontario Reign, who are in the fourth spot. It's pretty close, aside from Coachella Valley, who have just gone away at the top of the Pacific. But Abbotsford just hasn't played very well this year, so unless they figure it out down the final stretch here, it looks like they're going to finish as the seventh seed. But yes, they will make the playoffs, because those teams behind them are just way too far.
Yeah, especially, like, I almost think of the AHL as the opposite of the MLB, in the sense that in baseball the playoffs are decided so quickly, and it's especially before they introduce the wildcard format. Look at me talking about baseball. Jeez.
Let's go.
This is part of why I actually didn't enjoy following baseball, because so many teams would be out of the race so quickly that it would take away the suspense of following. Like, your team season could be over like a month into the year, right? Especially as I was kind of following the Blue Jays early on. This is a little bit too extreme in the opposite direction with the AHL, where pretty much everybody makes it. But it's understandable from Abbotsford's perspective, because they've run into some injuries. They have a player like Noah Juulsen, who was logging huge minutes for them last season. Now part of the NHL team. They've had to shuttle up. Look at a guy like Arshdy Baines, and more recently Vasily Podkolzin, up to service the NHL team as well. So they've had less talent to work with compared to last season.
Absolutely. And I mean, look, you brought up baseball. This is why I like the expanded playoffs. Harm, Commissioner Manfred, hate him because of how he handled the Houston Astros thing, but he's made really good changes to the game. Like, baseball is a lot more accessible, a lot more fun to watch. And just put it in perspective, like, baseball games used to take anywhere between 2.5 to 4.5 hours. Now, like, baseball games are 2.5 to 3 hours tops, right? Like, that's what they are with the pitch clock. And hell, even if you go to a Vancouver Canadiens game, like, you're out of there a lot faster. And I really like that personally, as somebody who drives down to Seattle to go watch MLB games. It's so much more accessible. It's so much easier to plan your kind of day around, right? You're not sure how long you're going to be at the ballpark in years past, but now you kind of know. I like it a lot more. And yes, they've expanded the playoffs. So, Harm, maybe this is all part of you becoming a baseball fan. What else are you going to do in the offseason, right?
Okay, so I do have a confession. I think it was, I don't know if I've told this before, but around when I was like 18, I over one summer got so deep into because I love playing NHL GM modes, right? And I started playing Eastside Hockey Manager. Then I learned about Out of the Park Baseball, which is basically just a GM mode, but on steroids. It's the best GM mode ever. So just because the hockey equivalent of it wasn't as good, and the baseball one was unbelievable, I spent an entire summer just playing that thing every day. Every day.
That's awesome. And now you're going to spend an entire summer coming to T-Mobile Park with me.
Good one.
All your progression. We're going to a Canadiens game. We're going to a Canadiens game.
That I'm down for.
You've been before, right?
Yes, yeah.
We might need a Nation Network Canucks Army roadie Blue Jays Mariners.
Nope. No, we don't. Will not go. No, I refuse to go down when the Jays are in town. I won't. Oh.
Have you ever been to one?
Yeah, do you know I go to Mariners games for $10 US? Those tickets are all going for like $240 because all the season ticket holders are jacking up the price. So
yeah, Jays the prices are outrageous. I do agree. And it's not just ticket prices. It's hotel, Airbnb. And then, of course, you got to get food and all that, too. So. Yeah,
I ain't doing that. And the cost, look, I think we're going to do some Nation vacations because all the other, like Oilers Nation, Flames Nation, they do them. And it's a ton of fun. I think we'll go down to Seattle for a Kraken game. Canucks versus Kraken. I think that might be a little better for Canucks Army, especially since the managing editor of Canucks Army is quite publicly a Seattle Mariners fan.
Athletics Mariners. Let's go.
Yes. That's actually the one I went to last year.
$6 tickets. Okay, there you go. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Anyways. Nation vacation for that. Just Mariners at Athletics. Athletics at Mariners.
Speaking of cheap tickets, I remember 2 years ago, I was on the Canucks' entire New York road trip week long where they played Rangers, Devils, Islanders 2 years ago. And on the way to the Devils game at Prudential Center, I ran into a fan who had bought tickets for $3 to watch an NHL hockey game. $3.
Wow, that's like unheard of, eh?
I know.
So I guess I should know the answer to this, but I don't. Like, you know how when, when the Sabres came to town in years past, or the Ducks, or whoever, right? Like, those bottom-of-the-barrel, kind of crappier teams. The tickets were always cheap in Vancouver when it was a bad team. But, like, you know, when Toronto comes in, or Montreal, those tickets are all super expensive. Is Vancouver the Anaheim Ducks in, like, New Jersey?
No, I don't think it's... The low price was because Vancouver's a poor opponent. I just think it's a tough market on a weekday, especially to sell games in. And yeah, I mean, of course, if it was the Rangers or the type of team where you'd have a lot of out-of-market fans flooding in, yeah, the ticket prices would be jacked up. But it's mostly just because that arena is massive. Like, it's too big. And especially the Devils weren't good that year either, so...
That's fair. That's very, very fair. I like this. I like this a lot. People are talking about cheap tickets. Got me thinking. Nation vacation to Coquitlam for a Coquitlam Express game. Get everybody on board.
That's I think you're going to be sick that day.
All right. Moving right on. Okay, this is an interesting one. I'll throw it to you, Harm. From Jesse C., how much or how little do you value secondary assists compared to primary points?
It depends. I mean, I only focus in on secondary assists and sort of raise my eyebrows if you have a player that has, let's say, an outlier year offensively, and they have a disproportionate percentage of their assists being secondary types, because that's where you maybe look at it. And especially if you watch the video back and see how involved the player actually was in whether they actually influenced the eventual goal or whether they just happen to touch the puck and get a lucky secondary assist. That's when you dive in and maybe see, okay, this guy might be a regression candidate. But most of the times you have situations where look at Henrik Sedin, for example. He would rack up a ton of secondary assists, but he also just racked up a ton of assists in general. And he was such a pass first player that you're not looking at his number of secondary assists and saying, oh, his point totals are inflated by these secondary apples. You kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis, and I only really look at it in outlier situations.
Logan Van Dyke, how important is the President's Trophy this season? I feel like at the end of the day, a trophy is a trophy. And given the preseason expectations and how cutthroat the West is, we'd have been over the moon to pick up a President's Trophy with a President's Trophy prior to the year. Yes, you're excited about a President's Trophy, but JT Miller, he wasn't asked about this, but he brought it up unprompted about how the team that wins the President's Trophy often doesn't do very well in the playoffs. And that's his opinion, right? Is, you know, the guys who win the President's Trophy don't face much adversity, so they're not going to do as well in the playoffs. That was the context of him talking about it. I find it interesting. I think it'd be great to win the President's Trophy. It'd be hilarious given where we all thought this team would be at the start of this year, but I don't think the players in that room are chasing a President's Trophy. Like, I could tell you that. And I think if JT Miller's comments were any indication, I don't think the players really care about winning the President's Trophy.
I don't think too many of the fans do either.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, actually. And I think there's another trophy that everybody wants to win. That being the Campbell Trophy. What's it even called if you win the West, if you win the Western Conference Final? What's it called?
Clarence Campbell.
Oh, is that actually it? Okay, I just threw that out there. I always get confused with Colin Campbell. Yeah, Clarence Campbell. Yeah, that's it. Canadian soldier. Huh. Had to Google it, and I did. Okay. Are you buying or selling on Brock Besser in 24-25, Harm?
The Campbell Bowl is what it says.
Yeah, the Campbell Bowl. There you go.
Yeah.
This one from Dennis L. Are you buying or selling on Brock Besser in 2024? Or, excuse me, 2024-25 season?
I mean, what do you interpret the question as in terms of like buying or selling? Because if it's, is he going to replicate another 40 goal season? He's been riding a hot shooting percentage. I don't know if we can expect another 40 goal campaign, but do I still expect him to be productive and maybe rack up another 30 goal season? Yeah, absolutely. As long as he's continuing to play with, to play with JT Miller, continues to be a fixture on the first power play unit and stays healthy.
I wonder what that question is really meaning, because if it's are you trying to sell Brock Besser this offseason? I think he always try to sell high, but he has been a good fit for this team. And again, here's an answer for you, Harm. I'm buying or selling on Brock Besser depending on what happens in the playoffs. Like, are you trying to be a playoff team? Okay, well, what are you going to do if Brock Besser scores a bunch in the playoffs? I think you're going to be looking at an extension, or you're going to be looking at keeping him in Vancouver. What do you do if Brock Besser goes completely silent in the playoffs? I think we're having a different conversation.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating to keep an eye on. It's a tough decision if the Canucks have to make it this summer, because it's a career best season. We know how when you sometimes sign players to season to extensions coming off career best years, that it can end poorly. And especially because of Besser's injury history, you have to be mindful of how much you pay on a long-term deal. Especially because there also is the flip side of potentially selling high, but he's also so important to this team now on the power play at even strength as the trigger man for JT Miller, that it's not an easy spot for the Canucks to be in this summer and trying to decide, do we extend him? Do we explore the market? And if we can get a significant package, see if that makes sense, or if you just hold and wait to make a decision at the end of next season.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, this one, we'll close on this one. this one from Top G. If you guys weren't covering the Canucks, what other NHL team would you like to cover? That's a good question. I don't know. Like, the LA Kings, maybe? Like, it might be fun to live in LA.
Yeah, your best friend Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Oh, that's right. I would not want to. Well, actually, I might want to cover them. I don't think
that would be your whole shtick.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe it wouldn't be LA. But I don't know. Like Anaheim, if I could go back and cover them when like Timo Solani played there.
Yeah. See, I think you have to. LA, in terms of locale and everything, would be great. Amazing weather. But I also feel like LA isn't as passionate of a hockey market. That's one thing covering the Canucks that you really start to appreciate, especially when you travel to other rinks and you see empty buildings and the atmosphere just isn't the same. We have it really good in Vancouver, and that would have to be a consideration. Is you want to, at least for me, go to another hockey mad market. So for me, I think there'd be something iconic about either the Rangers or the Canadiens. I like both cities, And it has that mix of being a fun city to live in, plus the fans in those markets are, especially in Montreal, are so invested, bigger market, big storylines, that type of thing.
Fair enough. I think that's a good answer. Okay, we will close it out there. We'll be back tomorrow, folks, to break down and preview the Canucks game against the Dallas Stars. For my co-host, Harmon Dial, and our technical producer, Grady Sass, my name is Dave Guglielli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Canucks Conversation.
Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back, and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.